Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, February 12th. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about masks. That's M-A-S-K-S, the kind that go on your face to protect you and those around you from the COVID-19 virus. Not masts. Those are the things that hold up the sails on tall ships. So today we're going to talk about the supply of masks for healthcare workers and the general public, the CDC's new guidance on masks, and what we need to do to get everyone what they need to be safe and stop the spread of the virus. Taking their masks off briefly to talk about all this are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Who is that masked man? I thought it was the Lone Ranger, but it turns out that it's you, Kemosabe Berta. So how am I doing, Kemosabe? Hi-ho, Silver. I'm saddled up, fired up, and ready to round up.
Holy smokes. All right, Julie, is your energy even close to that level?
I am not coming in that hot this morning, I can tell you that. So on a more personal, emotional note, we just received word that my daughter's going back to school full time March 1st. So we're going to have to buy some more masks, that's for sure.
Okay, I guess congratulations are in order.
A little bittersweet, but it's exciting.
Great. Now, before we talk more about masks in the healthcare supply chain, let me ask you a question about masks. What bothers you most about how people wear them, short of not wearing one? Dave, what have you seen that makes you go, you've got to be kidding me?
Oh, it's when people use their masks like chin straps. Give me a break.
Julie, how about you? What gets under your skin about mask wearing?
Dave, we are 100% on the same page. I said under the chin. It makes me crazy, but I need to do a PSA because for anybody who follows me on Instagram, they know my biggest pet peeve is the mask on the ground. It's our new litter category and they are everywhere. So I've made it my business to create public service announcements in the forms of memes to bring these poor little masks that are literally helping to save our lives some sympathy.
Doing your part for humanity, Julie. That's great.
Exactly. I'm even now taking to picking them up off the ground and trying to get people to do that too. So it's a little crazy.
Now, for me, it's people who wear those gaiters that they pull up over their mouths and noses. They remind me of this character named Mort in the old Bazooka Joe comic strip, who always had his red turtleneck pulled up over his mouth. And for some reason, that always bugged me. So I don't know if you're... Yeah. Dave, you may remember Bazooka Joe. I'm not sure Julie does.
I learn a lot from you, Berta. That's for sure.
All right. Let's talk about what's bugging the industry about masks. Dave, what are you seeing, hearing, reading about the supply of masks for healthcare workers specifically and the public generally?
Most of the concern has focused on the N95 masks. These are the federally tested and approved masks that filter out more than 95% of aerosol particles. They're absolutely essential for frontline healthcare workers treating COVID patients. Overall, the global supply has exceeded global demand. So when that happens, there are shortages, and there have been shortages throughout the U.S., particularly as demand for the N95 masks has increased over the summer when cases spiked. Premier, the group purchasing organization, estimates that domestic demand for N95 masks has gone up 5 times since July, and prices for those masks have doubled. Given the shortages, most healthcare workers are wearing their N95 masks longer than recommended or even reusing them, which is truly unfortunate. Almost all of the N95 masks in the U.S. are going to healthcare workers, almost none to consumers. Ironically, Dave, many smaller domestic manufacturers cannot find buyers for their N95 masks. The reasons for this include slightly higher prices than Chinese counterparts and overcoming ingrained buying habits at hospitals, medical supply distributors, and governments. There are also concerns regarding widespread counterfeiting of N95 masks. So a lot going on there. The new Biden administration has invoked the Defense Production Act to ramp up manufacturing. That, in combination with declining disease spread, may restore market equilibrium short term. Longer term, this is a problem that clearly needs fixing. And let's hope we have the fortitude to address PPE supply chain issues. Former CMS Administrator Kerry Weems, who's a Foresight Health influencer, likes to cite his three iron laws for pandemics. First iron law, before pandemics, any spending is too much. Second iron law, during pandemics, all spending is too little. And after pandemics, people forget. We obviously can't afford to forget this time.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. Julie, tell us about what the new CDC guidance says about mask wearing and how that guidance could affect the supply issues that Dave talked about.
Yeah, well, CDC, getting back in the game, which is great, released some guidance on Wednesday on two new methods to improving a mask fit, which significantly increases effectiveness. So it's great to see science kind of coming along here. The first one, which I know a lot of people have heard of since it's been a big issue on social, is doubling up. So we're starting to see people here and there wearing a cloth mask over a surgical mask. I think we'll see a lot more doubling up over the next coming months. The second is, if you're wearing a surgical mask, they recommend that you knot the ear loops and you tuck in the sides and you try to create as little airflow as possible out of that mask. So, you know, in the simulation, scientists found that people were protected up to 96% better, or exposure was reduced by 96%. So that's good guidance coming out. What I found interesting and maybe entertaining is that they cited some studies from University of Wisconsin, Madison, and the Badgers have really looked closely at these things called mask fitters. Are you guys familiar with mask fitters?
I am not.
So a mask fitter can either be, I mean, literally picture this, an elastic or, you know, something like that worn over the mask and secured with ear loops, you know, the same way a mask is, or something solid, same thing. And these fitters alone can just protect the effectiveness of one mask by 90%. So they're really pushing their fitters. They've even put their fitter design out into the public as open source. You can make a fitter at home. So we're kind of back into the, you know, the homemade thing. I will say, though, that in this CDC guidance, CDC removed the make your own mask at home guidance because they felt like it wasn't something they should be pushing anymore. So we have a lot of new options. I'll say the supply chain here is still an issue, because if we're doubling up, we're having, you know, more mask issues on the demand side. And I come back to the fact that we still need to get people to wear one mask. And for all those who can't necessarily afford masks, all this guidance doesn't really help. So we're still going to have, you know, some lack of mask issues.
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
Doubling up reminds me of the double mint gum commercials. You know, two is better than one, and one, double the protection, double the confidence. The only thing I'd add is just make an observation on the different mathematics for viruses and vaccines. Viruses exponentially go up and down. So 2 goes to 4, goes to 8, goes to 16, goes to 32, goes to 16, goes to 8, goes to 4, and so on. And just to illustrate that, on December 1st, the 7-day average for new cases was 160,000. By January 8th, that was up to 250,000. And yesterday, it was down to 100,000. So you got logarithmic multiplication on the way up and logarithmic division on the way down. And that is largely driven by the explosive nature of virus infection rates, and then the very powerful effect of public health and social distancing behaviors. Vaccines, by contrast, are just pure arithmetic, 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. And there's no subtraction, but it takes a long time for that arithmetic increase to catch up to the viral multiplication. So all this talk about masks continues to be remarkably important, because we can't let down our guard because we are susceptible to more outbreaks, particularly given these new strains of even more infectious coronaviruses that have come to the U.S. from South Africa and Britain and other places.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about some solutions to the problems that you guys have unmasked. Get it? Unmask? Crickets, huh? All right. Julie, what supply chain improvements would you make to make sure everyone had all the masks they needed to protect themselves from COVID-19?
You know, the supply chain seems complicated and it also seems simple. The three issues come down to resiliency, agility, and cost efficiency. And what we've been doing in this country for decades is really solving for cost efficiency and not really paying attention to our resiliency or agility. So the complex part about this is it's really changing how we think about supply and demand and our flexibility to meet times like this. So the good news is that a survey of supply chain professionals found that 87% of them were planning on investing in resiliency in the next 2 years and 89% in agility over the same time frame. So hopefully on the manufacturing side, we're starting to see some recognition that this needs to change. Today, we produce to demand. So we need that flexibility and somehow need to create some sort of artificial floor. So that's the first thing from reading, you know, how experts think about this. We need to get out of this bullwhip kind of effect and produce ahead of where demand might be in times like this. My favorite idea is the need for transparency and inventory from the location level at a hospital all the way up to the national picture of our inventory. And I know this is a huge issue with ICU beds in the very beginning. It's obviously a huge issue with gloves still, all these needles that we need to get the last drop of vaccine out of these vials. You know, experts are advising that we invest in standards like unique device identifiers and also invest in technology tools like scanners to be able to help every single location meet the inventory capabilities needed across the country at a time like this. And this isn't just acute and non-acute settings, but it's also distributors and manufacturers. Some of the basics there that could really help. You know, obviously, there are ways that we can deal with planning for the surge. At a regional level, healthcare organizations can form coalitions around some of this and plan guidelines on how they would distribute. And you know, it's pretty clear that we need some education of our clinicians and physicians around how to best use some of what they have. And immediately post-pandemic, we should be looking at conservation and decontamination strategies and you know, developing clinically accepted product lists and things like that. So there's a lot to be done, Dave.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Dave, if you were the nation's mask czar, what would you do? How would you use your regulatory powers to fix the supply problems?
Well, I think Julie's pretty much covered the waterfront on the policy issues. So obviously, the government's got a big role there. I'll use my time to amplify or go a little deeper on resilience and then talk about how technology can help. First on resilience. There's a clear trade-off between efficiency and resilience. You know, for example, planting apple trees closer together produces more apples, but it also makes those apple trees more susceptible to crop-destroying diseases and insect infestation. Supply chains are complex systems that can become brittle and suspect to failure. You know, for example, in the 1990s, Mexico experienced a major famine due in part to opening up markets for Mexican corn to come to the U.S. just as the U.S. was ramping up ethanol production. You know, so a butterfly flaps its wings and, well, you know, the rest of the story. As Julie mentioned, left to their own devices, markets will default to efficiency, which is why the U.S. became so dependent on N95 masks produced in China. So given this supply chain complexity, there must be proactive strategies to create resilience and agility at the expense of efficiency. And that's where I thought Julie's going pretty deep on policy recommendations was so powerful. But technology can help, like it is in so many areas. The IDC Futurescape forecast predicts life sciences and healthcare companies will increase AI and advanced analytic investments by 50% to avoid future supply chain disruptions. And how will that happen? These smart systems will suggest actions to optimize shipments and inventories. They will learn and continuously improve. AI will sift through large and numerous traditional and non-traditional data sets to identify and even anticipate shortages and then respond to them. we'll see internet searches for fevers, for example, will trigger expectations of shortages. So you can expect AI investments related to medical supply chains to grow along with critical insights offered by advanced supply chain software. So machines talking to machines and informing humans. So both these areas, resilience and technology, can come to the rescue, just like the Lone Ranger.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
No, I would just say Dave's spot on with the emphasis on technology and also what he talked about there in terms of what it implies about public-private collaboration and, you know, the need for some government definition and some private sector work and even some pre-positioning of contracts around certain things so that we are prepared. None of that can be underestimated. And my understanding actually is that there was a plan in place at some point, you know, in the last decade at the federal level. So let's just dust that off and bring it back.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Okay, now let's talk about next week. Julie, what should we be watching for next week in terms of big healthcare news?
Well, I would just like to say that last week I predicted a healthcare IPO and this week Signify went public and the valuation is through the roof. So just patting myself on the back, got one right. You know, gosh, Dave, I don't know. Another SPAC. I don't know.
You got to pull your chips back in and be happy with one for one?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Dave, what's on your healthcare radar next week?
Well, I think we're going to get back to talking about vaccines. There's still people scrambling to get them, including myself. I've got a friend that's built a bot to go onto websites to constantly ping him when vaccines become available. So he's put me on his list. So I'm hoping to actually get one next week using a bot. But there's good news on the vaccine front. Julie's friend, Andy Slavitt, helped negotiate an additional 200 million virus doses from Pfizer and Moderna. So by summer, all Americans should have access to those vaccines, which is just great news. So I think we'll be talking about vaccines.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. So you guys can put your masks back on. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.